Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Mojan Sohi.
Hey, Mojan, when we were chatting before recording and stuff, you mentioned that you get a question in various ways, but fairly commonly you're getting this question about reliability thinking. Is when is that, is it started early enough, or is it started appropriately? Or I didn't get the whole context of the phrasing, but I thought, oh, I'm going to write that down. We got to record that one.
So. Yeah, I think it's a great topic. And yes, I have been asked this question a number of times over the past, like, I don't know, probably a couple of years, but people ask me when I tell them about reliability and what I do. And people ask me, so do you find that organizations or, you know, corporations are proactive, mostly proactive about reliability? Like, do they start early on and implement the practices and the, you know, create the organization, build the organization early on? Or is it more that they are, or is it more reactive? Like, is it more that they run into a problem and something has failed, and then they, you know, panic maybe a little bit and try to figure out what happened. And then from there, they're like, okay, well, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? And then from there, it kind of, turns into a thinking about reliability for future. And I'm very curious, from your perspective, what you think, what have you seen more mostly? And do you think that it's changed over time as to how people approach this or think about it?
Yeah, I don't have good information, solid information about how it may have changed over time. But my best way to answer that question is that, well, let me preface it. In my consulting work, one of the things I've done, and I've done, I think, 150 different organizations, is a reliability assessment. It's where are you on the maturity matrix? Are you reactive? Are you really good at being reactive? Are you proactive, or are you really good at being proactive? Mm. And I don't even mention the first phase, which is we don't do reliability here. We just hire good people and it had better work. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, good luck with that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they're always surprised by it not working or being very variable. But so the very first group I did of assessments was across Hewlett Packard. And so it was a sample size of about 50 different, is one of my mentor would say, is the loosely affiliated feudal baronies. We called them product divisions.
I like that.
Because they were autonomous, pretty much, mm-hmm. very much autonomous. They ran their product lines. They did their own designs. They sorted out their manufacturing. And there was some synergies across divisions, but very rare. And what he found, and then I repeated it, about 15 years later, was that most of the organizations were in a reactive mode of one sort or another. It was, we're going to build units and we're going to run prototype testing on benches and in chambers and all kinds of different things. And then we'll find stuff and we'll fix it. It's the classic build, fix, test, or build, test, fix, and mm-hmm. cycle it. And just run enough cycles and you get enough things fixed and you're done. And what Dick Moss recognized is that the divisions that were proactive about it were doing design for reliability stuff like derating and stress strength analysis and halt testing and thermal engineering to figure out where the heat is going. These were mostly all electronics boxes. And paying attention to variability in the manufacturing process and in the supply chain and so on. And they would do very few build, test, fix cycles because the first one would find a few things they were concerned about, they'd fix it, and then it was ready to ship. So not only did they design a better mm-hmm. product, they saved a lot of development time. And they had very low warranties in the field. And So he says, why don't we teach the rest of the organization how to do derating and stress strength analysis and thermal management and take, you know, avoid ESD damage and stuff like that. And so when I did my test, a lot of that baseline stuff was permeated through the organization. Yet there was still the predominance, I'd say 80% of the teams I interacted with were still doing reactive. It was, yeah, we're going to do some of the basic stuff, but kind of, we're going to check off the list that we thought about derating and said, all right, we thought about derating, done. They didn't actually do derating where they actually bought components that were properly derated or set up mechanisms that were properly, you know, tensioned or the tolerances set correctly or any of the stuff.
Do you know why? What was holding them back? Was it lack of education or was it like?
Well, they were.
Yeah.
Most of these teams were aware of the training that Dick was doing and that I had been doing on the design for reliability type stuff. Yet one of it's the opposite of a virtuous circle. It's a whatever that's called, vicious circle.
Vicious circle.
Where the last product had problems, and so we pulled a third of the engineering team off to go solve those problems. It takes time and effort because you've got a lot of things locked down. You got supply chain constraints. It's very expensive and time consuming to fix design issues after you start shipping. And so they pulled a bunch of their design team out. Now they have a short design team. They don't have enough manpower, lack of a better word. They didn't have enough resources to really get the design right. So they were waiting until the electrical engineers got freed up so they could do this part and that part. We need the concept. We need the basic bill of materials. We'll worry about details later. And now, but they didn't change the shipping date, the launch date. And so they were rushed in the time period when you can get the design right. And then engineers got added back into the team because now they're having lots of problems with their prototypes not working. And then they got to ship anyway. They take a third of their team off to go fix those problems. So I saw that over and over again. And it just becomes a vicious circle. You just can't, it's the analogy of you're trying to build an airplane while it's flying kind of thing. So that was difficult. That's one part I saw. And the only real fix to that is stop it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Extend one of your launch dates, get the design right, save your engineering team so they don't have to go fix things later, you know, get enough resources to get it right from the start, save a lot of hassle, get your design right, and you break that cycle. Oh, we can't afford this. Do you want to keep shipping products that have 10% field failure rates and you're losing market share and your customers don't trust your brand anymore? Is that what you want?
Yeah, because that's the alternative. That's what happens.
That's what happens.
That's what happens. Yeah.
And so I'd say the hard part is that in consulting, it's usually a group in stage two or three in a reactive mode that says, why is our reliability so difficult to get right, to get it done? And that tends to be my clientele. So my basis on the other 150 has been pretty heavily skewed by organizations that know they need help, but they, in proactive organizations, tend to, they ask way better questions. I enjoy working with them. It's harder because it's not usually obvious. There's something that they could hone or polish or make a little better. And helping them is a whole different challenge than helping a company that's in reactive mode to break that cycle to get moving into a more proactive one. So to answer your question, it's vast majority of the ones I've seen. And even with the best sample I could take, which was across one organization with 50 feudal baronies, is that 75, 80% of them are solid reactive. And there's all kinds of reasons for it. And I just illustrated one of them. And the most devious one is, well, that's the way we always are. It always is. Mm-hmm. It's just been an acceptance that that's what product development is
yes,
things go wrong and we got to fix it. And that's the way we do it.
And I wonder if you also saw this as well, because I saw the another side effect of this that ended up reinforcing this cycle, unfortunately, more was that the even the analogy that you mentioned of like we're building the plane while or we're flying the plane while we're building it is it comes off as a, it feeds this heroism type culture where if you're working on a hard if you're working to fix an issue that has come up really hard and you're working overnight and or long hours whatever like you're rewarded because that's the because you're solving a big problem but in reality I find that rarely people ask like how did we get into this situation in the first place? Could it have been prevented, in the first place? And can are there practices that we can implement that help us, not get into these situations? And that unfortunately is rarely asked. And I think the other part to your point about sample size is or the fact that your sample size may be or your sample set may be a bit biased is that when it is done well, it's rarely celebrated, unfortunately, because you it's hard to show the value of a problem that didn't happen, right? It's hard to show the value for the work that you did for a problem that didn't happen because the problem didn't happen. So everyone's like, yeah, it's, of course the problem
Well,
didn't happen.
it's not a great argument to say, we ran this test and half of them failed, and it's systemic in the design that half of these things are just not going to work. Then you could say, all right, let's fix that. But you're right. If the design was done well the first time, and you didn't discover it in a test that half of them are failing, none of them failed. It's the real value of that comes in is that we can ship on time. We can meet our customers' expectations. And then you see lower warranty costs. You see happier customer satisfaction. You get to spend the weekend at home before the launch date rather than in a factory someplace in the world trying to get it to work. There's what I have found in the companies that really get the proactive part of it is that the plants are green. It's calm. There's no runabout scream and shout kind of stuff going on. Customers call to spontaneously give you a testimonial of how good your products are. And what else can we work with you on and buy from you? They have very low turnover in their engineering ranks because it's a great place to work. It's just on and on and on is we can be innovative. We have time to add that, male hairy type feature that it rocks the marketplace. It's because we can think it through and get and work on it and decide if it meet our standard or not, and then decide, yeah, it's good, or we're going to take the risk or we're not. And but it's very well thought through. And the value part comes into, I mean, if it's always like that, and there are companies that just get it. And they think about reliability at concept, and it's thought through in material selection. And what are the biggest points that we need to have? It might take a long lead time to get various ICs at different speeds so that we can check the margins because that's an area we're really pushing. And they go do it. Whereas the reactive ones go, well, we got 15 things to put in here. We only have time to think about three of them. Let's just shove them all in there and see if any of them work. And then it's like, well, we just sold this as all 15 have to be there. And nobody really thought through the reliability impacts of any of these innovations or new ideas or whatever. And so, do people think about it soon enough? Some do. The ones that are very proactive, that are anticipating what could go wrong and then investigating it and thinking it through and making educated judgments about what risk they want to take. And so yes, some do, and others give it lip service, and it shows.
There are signs.
There
I
are,
find. I like that. I should make a meme. Another good t-shirt thing. We can make a t-shirt of this.
Well, it was actually a Super Bowl ad for EDS, I think it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago, is they, and they had, you know, they, yeah, you got to find it. It's on YouTube, I'm sure it's still. Yeah. And it was hilarious how it worked. They also did an ad, I think the year prior, where it was herding cats. It's another analogy, you know, and it's a common phrase. I've heard it, lots of other scenarios of it. But it was all these cowboys in the range in West Texas someplace herding cats, running cats to market kind of thing. And when you get 500 long hairs into market on time, that's satisfying. And he's got a lint brush and he's rolling cat fur off of his shirt, you know. It was great. But it's the one of the things that Henry Petrosky, in one of his books, he's a historian of engineering design and practices and stuff like that. One of the things he this is in a preface of his book of Design Paradigms that talks about engineers inherently want to be successful. It's good for their career. It's personally satisfying. Mm-hmm. It's when you design something, you want it to work. And it's enabling them to understand where the risks are, trade off what to work on, what not to work on. That's reliability. It's influencing the decisions such that reliability along with cost, with functionality and everything else is in balance. That is, it's a thought through trade off. And I don't know a single engineer that says, oh, I want to design this so it fails all the time so that we can make it up in spares. Oh, wait a sec, I do know people like that. They're military suppliers. But it's, most of them want it to work. And it's building on that preface or, you know, behavior or thought process to enable that to happen is really how you can help foster that thinking about reliability impact right from the start. And so I don't think it's impossible. It's just understanding, well, what information do you need so you can make better decisions that impact reliability? And the very early decisions often have the most impact. So it's proactive teams do that very actively. Even without a reliability engineer anywhere in sight, but they proactively think through reliability and the impacts of the decisions they're making, whereas reactive teams don't. And unfortunately, in my experience, it's a small fraction of organizations are truly proactive.
Unfortunately, it has also been the same in my experience. But maybe that's something that we can hope to. That will change. The trend should shift. I hope the trend shifts.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's a lot of other forces, and it might be a whole other discussion. Why do people stay in reactive mode? Because we only touched on a couple of different elements of it. And then what do you do about it? And that might be a good segue into questions from our audience. It's like, if you recognize that you're in a reactive mode related to reliability, you know, what's the circumstance? What do you think is holding the organization back from being really proactive? And I suspect there's many, many different factors, and many of which I haven't run across. I have seen a few, and there's some common threads that I've seen, but I'm sure there's other ones out there. Or even better, if you've got a solution for one, here's the circumstance, and here's what you guys did. Your team did to break that cycle, or you're working within your organization, how you moved the organization to be proactive. That would make a good story.
Yes, absolutely. We would love to hear that.
Yeah. So you can do that over at ascendoreliability.com/go. There's a /SOR. You can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Jean and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. So you can send us a message or case study or a question or whatever, you know, it's on your mind. And we'll get back to you as soon as we can. We'll either that or we'll find somebody that can help you out and get an answer back to you. And then more than likely, we'll probably make it a, because I have a stack now. This start of this year has been great. I've got like 8 or 9 different comments and questions from people. waiting to line up with the different podcasts. So you can add to that stack and get your question thought through by a couple of us on our podcast. That'd be fun. Hopefully informative too.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks so much, John. We'll talk to you again soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks, Fred. Thanks All for right. your time. And thanks for everyone for listening.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.